The Around the League podcast has more holes than the Cowboys' defense.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What's up, Dan?
That was not a Chris Wessling, hey, Dan.
We're a little annoyed.
You're all the way across the room. I have to yell over
there. Oh,
yeah. TD, we sat down last show in our new studio and said, this will be the seating order, and we'll get a photo out there, how we'll sit from now until the end of days. But within one show, TD's blowing the whole thing up.
Wow. TD, now you're seeing what it's like for me. Yeah, I know. Bunch of prima donnas. Who cares where we sit?
Mark, welcome back from San Diego. You were sent to the Southern California city, the coastal city, to cover Cowboys Chargers. You met a man in a McDonald's restaurant to get your credential. You sat in a press box.
Was it Rob Ryan?
You sat in a press box like a professional in that dump of a stadium. How was it?
It was good. I learned very quickly that they hand out an inordinate amount of food. There was slices of pizza. There was boxes of popcorn. There was pie. It was like peach cobbler pie, which I don't think I've ever eaten that, but I ate it last night. Very good.
And did you, you know, you're a real reporter guy. Did any of the other real reporters ask you to sit at the lunch table?
They gave us assigned seating, and the Chargers were nice enough to put me smack dab. Like, right in front of us is a desk, right below is the field. Beautiful. Some guys were six rows up. I'm not sure what they saw.
There wasn't like a scene, though, where you're carrying a tray and you're trying to like make eye contact with the cool reporters, but they're looking down because they're like,
eh. You said cool reporters.
Yeah. Well, I did meet again Clarence Hill, a Cowboys reporter that Wes and I met at the Combine and had quite a nice evening with. Yes, we did, Wes.
I'll take your word for it.
Yes, we did.
I don't know what that means. I like to think that you maybe encountered a bully, maybe someone from the San Diego Union Tribune that like spilled your pizza on the floor and said, get out of here, dweeb.
There were like 200 or 300 reporters there, so it wasn't as if...
What?
That's the Super Bowl?
That's not true.
I mean, there were rows and rows of reporters. It wasn't, it was like every head turned when you walk in a dive bar in some weird town.
By the way, the way that TD set this up, I cannot even see him right now.
Yeah, you can.
Usually we connect and we're able to make eye contact
subtly.
That's true. I got to turn my head 90 degrees.
We're working out the kinks, guys. We're almost here.
I almost missed the icebox right now.
One of the kinks you're working out is in Dan's neck now.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey now.
Nailed it. Wes on fire this morning. All right, so we got a great show today. We have a guest coming in. He is a writer, analyst, I should say, for ProFootballFocus.com, a website that Wes has what seems to be a complicated relationship with. He is Pete Damoletis of PFF. So he's going to come on later. We are going to stick with first night of preseason action in earnest on Thursday. Six games, and we're going to go through all those games, and we're going to do it, with a bit of mirth, as we're known for, and we've won awards for that. It's not just the football analysis in my mind; it's also the mirth. All I do is win, no matter what. But before that, how are you doing, TD? Other than some of the production issues, I'm very happy to see you today.
guys, I'm doing well, though. It's good times. I was glad to be back in last day of the week. Myself, you, Dan, and Chris Wessling shot some hoops earlier this week.
We did.
Some good run. You know, Chris Love, the Rich Eisen podcast, came out there. Good times. Fun times.
Chris Love, the Rich Eisen podcast. I'll tell you what. As a fellow big man, banging with him down low, I was pretty sore afterwards. That is a large, powerful man.
He's a large body.
And sweaty.
And hairy.
He seems athletic to me.
He can play. He has a special move that I call the snot jump shot, because I was guarding him, and first he wipes his snot off his nose, and then so I back off because I don't want any parts of
it. I like that. It's a smart move.
He just takes a jump shot. It's like, what?
They're describing him like he's like the bad guy in like a sports movie theme for kids in the early
90s. He's like the really rottens in the old cartoons.
All right, so how are you doing today? I was thinking that most of the news we talked about is about these games, so we're going to do a lot of talk of the preseason games, so... How about this? Can we now do some news?
Your team now. Your players now. Your NFL now.
Oh.
That is a shameless plug right there, guys.
Shadowy league figures. Pat's TD on the head.
NFL Now, our new format, or new platform, I should say.
Our new digital format platform got lunch a couple of days ago, and it's here now, guys.
Well, we know. We've been taping hits for it for weeks on end, so at some point you're going to be able to see Mark and Chris and Dan and myself all honking about the latest news of the day.
It should be called NFL at some point.
Yeah, I fear for people when they take a look at this.
I think that I've already been plotting this, how long to wait before we stage a Friends-style walkout over contract once we get on camera. I was thinking 12 months initially, 1 year, but now I'm more thinking maybe 3 months.
This sounds promising.
Yeah.
Well, it would need to happen right when the waters – here we are. We're doing our thing every day, and it seems like we've got these guys locked in till at least after draft before we get down to talk about the future. Just drop it. Thanksgiving weekend. We're unhappy. We want more.
I had an old boss that once said, make yourself essential. Once we dig in to NFL Now, they're going to have to pony up. And, Greg, you're going to lead the charge as the boss.
No. Chandler will lead the charge.
When I leave the studio each time when we tape the NFL that Now hits, that's what I think. That was essential, what we just did.
Well, all right.
All right, so let's start. Since we had a man in the field in San Diego, Mark Sessler will start with the Cowboys and Chargers, a game that if you're a Cowboys fan and you're a little nervous about – what that defense is going to do this season or not do. You have some reason to be concerned. The Chargers had no problem moving the ball on the Cowboys, and the only real bright spot was Brandon Whedon, which tells us a lot. So, Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you saw from both teams?
I will let others chime in on aspects of the game. On the way home, I got caught. The 405, which is a terrible highway that runs north-south in California, all five lanes shut down. For some two-exit-long construction problem. So I had to go on a 18-mile circuit around up some strange road, got home around 2:30 in the morning, standstill traffic, came up with a list about what annoyed me most about what I saw on the field.
Ooh.
Ooh, I like this.
I like this. Why don't we hear them? Let's hear the list.
You sure?
I would like to hear it. I don't know about you fellas.
I would love to hear it.
It is a 50 words to describe the Dallas Cowboys defense that I saw last night.
I got a good feeling about this. All right, let's hear it.
Hang with me here. Here we go. Putrid. Shipwrecked. Dreaming in space. Mealy. Dog bit. Moist. Abyss. Bieber-like. Rustic, but not in a good way. Cowed. Overly cute. Unabashedly feminine, lost in a fog of incorrect thinking, Control-Alt-Delete, wind-damaged, childlike but not to suggest innocence or purity, an eternally open door, frightening laughter of the idiot, ultra-hazy, viciously below average, we're 20 in, a picture of societal
Wait,
norms.
We're 20 in out of how many?
50. A picture of societal norms unhinged on the gridiron.
Wait, so that counts only for one word?
Yes, it is terms.
That's only one
That's
word.
A phrase.
It
terms.
Is terms or phrases. 20.
Let me know when you get to 30.
Two, Greg.
Let me know when you get
distressing,
to 30.
Distressing. A scorched meadow. A dystopian wasteland of the mind. A 400-year stay in Paramus, New Jersey.
Ooh.
Every
good,
horrible
good ball there.
Every horrible ex-girlfriend embodied in a loose 4-3 scheme.
All right, can we stop you there for a second?
Yes.
And then we're going to get back to the back end of the list. Because we need to digest the front of that.
No, that's fair.
And that's
very fair.
I was expecting Marinelli to be one of the words.
Well, we're not done yet.
So, by the way, so what were your thoughts on the defense? I'm not sure where you were going with that.
Everything San Diego tried to do, it did in spades. Phillip Rivers looked outstanding. Every running back they put out there is plowing for 6, 7, 8, 9, 22 yards a carry.
Well, Jason Garrett and Rod Marinelli, their quotes weren't quite as colorful as yours, but they were along the same lines. Garrett's quote after the game was, sometimes they did okay, when asked about the defense. That's not really like a motto you want to print up on your T-shirts. Cowboys defense 2014. Okay. Sometimes they did okay.
Depressing. Yeah.
And Marinelli said we have to tackle better. I wouldn't be too worried. I mean, it was only the first week of the preseason.
Well, I am taking the liberty to completely overreact.
And by the way, I did mention him, Brandon Whedon, a bright spot. I already heard it downstairs, the way Rosenthal was talking. People are thinking about getting back on the bandwagon that I've been on the whole time. I'm sitting there. There's plenty of space. Tell us about Brandon Whedon, how he looked.
I don't think anyone's – if you put him in there as a 16-game starter with that defense – that is going to be mega ugly.
Well, we're
but
not saying that.
I think he to me looked like he had grown from where he was in Cleveland based on one game last night against an also not great defense.
But again, if he played a lot better last night, he would have been almost as good as he was last year in the preseason.
He was awesome.
that's we all know he blew up last August.
What he does.
That we're not saying more than that, but he made some throws. He got hit on his touchdown throw hard. I didn't see him do that in Cleveland.
I think the perception of Brandon Whedon is actually that he's a worse player than he really was. If you lined up his rookie starts against all the rookie starts of rookie quarterbacks over the last 10 or 15 years, drafting the first couple rounds, he'd be pretty close to average.
Because he was 30 years old.
That is a big factor. And I'm just saying he could have a career as a backup for the next 4 or 5 years.
He could be a backup.
That's all we're saying.
TD, you had what was called a hot take on the issue of the Cowboys.
Not really an issue. It's today a tweet from Dez Bryant, actually, and trying to prop himself up. And Michael Irvin, he tweets out, "Hey, Dallas Cowboys Nation, today is 8/8, August 8th. Who's going to do something great? At Michael Irvin, #88. I mean, come on. You just lob. This is like a softball right here. This is an alley-oop. You know, you're just walking right into that one. 8/8, really?
8/8 would be a good season for them.
Come on, Dave.
Look, there's a lot of problems with the Dallas Cowboys, but one of them is not Dez Bryant.
Well, no. Fair enough. That tweet, though, is could use some work.
And it's not their offensive line.
What's up with that?
Their offensive line is excellent.
Yeah, I'll save the Cowboys fans the trouble of tweeting at us. We know 5 starters were out last night. All right, relax.
Just don't tweet us anyway because, well, go ahead. I feel like blocking people today.
And wow. By the way, I guess I should say, not that it really matters, but the Chargers won that game 27-7.
Took care of business.
395 yards.
Moving forward, the New York Jets opened their preseason schedule against the Indianapolis Colts at MetLife Stadium. The big story, of course, is the quarterback position in New York where Michael Vick, I would say, did outplay Geno Smith. He got some series with the starters. He led the Jets on their only touchdown drive. He had a pretty 15-yard scramble on a 3rd-and-9 that kept that scoring drive alive, got the crowd going at MetLife Stadium, and showed that he still can move, even at age 34. So, and I will tell you this, Geno Smith did not do anything to lose the job. He led the team on a field goal drive, didn't have any meltdowns, no turnovers. But Vic keeps things interesting, and it makes you think what happens if he continues to play well next week. Is it possible he could steal this job?
Not before week one. There's nothing Geno Smith is going to do that could lose a job,
barring
I think,
injury,
this month.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Oh, I think there is.
Yeah,
he could have an epic face plant.
That's what it has to be, though.
Right.
It has to be an epic face plant.
Hey, by the way,
by
Mike
Geno.
Vic threw for 19 yards. I saw the New York Post cover. It's like, Vic is putting on the pressure. Well, it's Vic time. They had two
series.
But
that's the problem.
Right. This is what we've been saying all along. Even if you go into the season with Geno, it's almost a nightmare scenario that he's going to be looking over his shoulder and the fans are going to be clamoring. The papers are going to be clamoring
for
Vic.
It's tough.
I agree.
But this is New York, by the way. And you're a starting quarterback in New York. And if you're tough enough to handle that, then you deserve to keep the job. Geno is up against it, but
if
I don't think that's
there,
unfair to him.
The
it's
one
the
play, yeah. Michael Vick made exactly one play in the game, and it was a play that defines why his career has been a disappointment. He should have gone down. He starts. It was a 15-yard run where he showed off some wheels, but at the very end, he was about to get tackled, and he cut back to the inside. And in the regular season, you're going to get popped on that play, and then you're out. I mean, that's been Michael Vick.
You know, had the Jets gone out and stolen Matt Hasselbeck away from the Colts and had him as the mentor, the older guy,
stolen. You have to steal that Hasselbeck?
I don't know. He's a possession of the Colts. But the problem is, and this is, you know, what Wes and I have been talking about all offseason, is you're going to put Geno Smith out there. It's nice you want to believe in your young quarterback, but they have a closed-minded approach to this quarterback battle right now. He's going to start week one no matter what happens between now and then. That's an issue. That's not how to run a football team.
I thought you just
said
that the job was still open this summer.
I think it should be. I don't think it will be because I think they're going to do something dunderheaded and start Smith no matter what. But with a guy like Michael Vick in the New York fan base, that is a bad concoction for chaos.
Yeah, but I don't quite get where you're going with this because on one hand you're saying that the Jets are dunderheaded not to start Vick, but on the other hand, like we're saying...
No, to not say, listen, if Vick outplays Geno Smith, do you think Smith will still start week one? That's my concern.
The odds are there won't be a huge difference between the two. That's the reality. The odds are that they'll both be okay.
What is perception coming out of last night to the average Jets fan?
Yeah, but we're talking reality.
If they watched the game, they would not take it.
Ryan called him a huge, huge issue to deal with for defenses, and he said he played great.
He said that about Geno Smith, in fairness, too. He said he thought Geno played exceptional, which is funny because all he did was hand off.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if Rex Ryan and John Idzik are on different pages.
That's what I think is happening.
Yeah, that's fair.
Rex Ryan had to defend against guys like Michael Vick his whole career.
I think this is all secondary. The biggest takeaway for me in this game was Chris Ivory got hurt in four plays. He always gets hurt.
It's his move. He's going to use it.
Right, but that's a problem for them.
Chris Johnson did not look great. And then on the Colts side, they had injury issues. You know, they already lost their starting guard to a season-ending quad injury, that's Donald Thomas, and now they have their center, Khalid Holmes, suffered a ankle injury that he's getting an MRI on it Friday, so you don't know how serious that is. They had another rookie tackle, Ulrich John, go down as well as with a leg injury. So that offensive line, which has been an issue, you have to be a little concerned if you're a Colts fan about that.
But it didn't stop Daniel Boom Heron from scoring a touchdown.
I'd be more concerned if I was a Colts fan that Trent Richardson of 2014 looks exactly like Trent Richardson of 2013.
Not a lot of sunshine coming out of this game.
It was a little early. I don't know if
it's only five carries, but that's a slow running back.
That's fair.
Moving on, Greg, you mentioned Dan Boom Heron, the Colts running back, scored a touchdown on Thursday night against the Jets. That led to an old teammate of Heron, Chris Rainey, who was released under mysterious circumstances for breaking a team rule. He tweeted from his couch watching the game, "Nice TD, Boom, even though you was in the hallway with me that night when he was horsing around with the fire extinguisher. Man up like I did." Fire extinguisher, folks. We have a reason behind this.
And there was another tweet, right? He deleted them both quickly. Because he's a smart guy. And then he also said, yeah.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah, I'm pissed watching the Colts game when I should be out there too, even though I didn't break no effing team rules, not even.
So Chris Rainey, apparently something happened with a fire extinguisher. Boom Heron potentially had something to do with that. That's probably the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm sure Rainey did other things to annoy the Colts organization. But putting Heron on blast.
You called him a smart man?
Oh, he got that tweet right out of it. No,
yeah,
there was some sarcasm there.
Yeah, he just blasted the only organization in the NFL willing to give him like a forced shot.
Probably not a good idea. Mark.
I sense a little bit of injustice here, and I'm going to go from the other angle. It sounds like there was some malarkey. And
hijinks.
You've got Rainey sitting home on his couch because a friend of his wouldn't own up to some shenanigans in a hotel hallway.
But you have some sort of history with fire extinguishers?
Well, Greg and I will not go down a long road with this, but
I'd like to.
In the middle of the night, this is why this hits me, because in the middle of the night, I was with a couple of friends in our dorm, all right? We're on the fourth floor of a dorm throwing a Nerf football around.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, one of those little sprinklers in the ceiling, pop one of those things, and it sets off water pipes all along the hallway. And these felt ceiling tiles just melt into glue over the next 2 hours. It floods the entire building and caused thousands of dollars of damage. Everyone's evacuated for 3 hours outside. No one caught us. And we decided as a trio, we got to own up to this.
Such a – you know what?
We got to own up to this.
Bad decision.
And because we did.
Unlike Boom Heron.
And because
we did. I've seen this after school special.
You can say it's dumb, but they held us accountable for nothing because we were honest.
Well, you were lucky. You also would have been held accountable for nothing if you didn't admit to it.
How about the one guy who
no,
didn't?
No, because There's always video for things like that. There's always – you're going to get
not
caught.
Not in 1988 this happened.
This was not 1988. Listen, I just think Rainey is sitting home because his friend wouldn't stand up.
Well, that's
for
a great point. They probably did check the video. There are videos. And you know why? Because – you know, Heron's not a pain in the butt, and he's better at football. So they're like,
goes a long way.
We'll Rainey's sitting at home because of the other 37 knucklehead decisions he made over the last few years.
That's also very fair.
There's a scene in the Christmas Story, the classic movie, when Flick gets his tongue caught on the flagpole, and then the teacher comes back after the fire department takes Flick off the pole, and they're like, whoever was involved with this has to own up and come forward. And then Peter Billingsley's character, Ralphie, says, you know, kids, we know better. You never own up to anything because you're going to get busted if you do.
Well, I wasn't a kid, Dan. I was a man.
That was the day you became a man.
By the way, I do want to ask the question that all of our listeners have been thinking for the last 10 minutes. We are going to get to hear the end of Mark Sessler's list of adjectives about the Cowboys eventually, right?
At the end of the show.
Okay.
Always leave them wanting more.
I'm just making sure. I want to know for my own. I've been on the edge of my seat.
Me too. That was a Jets 13-10 win.
Thank you for putting these preseason scores out there, Dan.
A late field goal by an unknown kicker whose name I cannot recall at this time.
Fernie.
Right through the uprights.
Jets
and away we go.
Jets 1-0.
Almost there to the
game. Dan, tell the listeners what you proposed last night. Fernie for Mallett.
Straight up.
Who says no?
Who says no? And that leads us into our next game. Greg, watch this game with a With a glum look on his face. The New England Patriots open their preseason schedule against the Washington Redskins, where Ryan Mallett, in what Greg wrote was called Operation Showcase Ryan Mallett, off to a very slow start, did not look comfortable in the pocket, went 5 of 12 in action, did not get a point on offense, and not lead the offense anywhere. So things kind of backfired there. So if the Patriots thought that Ryan Mallett could be showcased for a deal, it blew up in their face, Greg, right in their face.
I don't think anyone wanted to trade for Ryan Mallett before this game. I don't think they'll want to at the end of the preseason because he has never been good in the preseason. He's never comfortable. He's never accurate. This was a particularly bad performance, 45 yards and no points in an entire half. But he never looks like a natural quarterback. And that's bad news.
I had the same reaction. He doesn't look like a natural quarterback. If you watched his counterpart, Kirk Cousins, had a much better handle on what was going on. If you turn on the Chiefs game, Chase Daniel has a much better handle on how to play quarterback than Ryan Mallett does.
Of course, the Patriots started guys that have no chance to make the team were in their starting lineup. It's ridiculous that people have to pay full price for a preseason game to watch that nonsense. But I'm going to spin it positive, Dan.
Ow!
Because as a Jets fan, you had to be a little worried watching the second half of this game and realizing that the Brady to Garoppolo transition is going to be like Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and you can just keep them on top of the AFC East for 25 years.
I can't wait to see. Wait to see the Patriots turn against Tom Brady like the Packers did with Favre.
No, we'll never do that. But I'm just saying, the guy is there. The future MVP is in the clubhouse.
He threw a nice touchdown pass at the end of the game. But I am not worried because you don't get lucky, Greg, all the time. An organization is lucky to get a Tom Brady once every 50 years.
What about the Colts?
Well,
that's what
outlier.
I was thinking, too.
You're not the Colts.
Just
after
the
this,
AFC's two best teams.
You're going back to the Patriots that you were for years and years, and the AFC's will be wide open again.
All jokes aside, Garoppolo has reportedly had a poor training camp in practice, but he had almost a perfect half of football. It wasn't just one throw. He had three or four great deep passes. He could have had another long touchdown if they had challenged a play. He had as good a half as he could against third and fourth teamers.
We should note that it was against people that would be, you know, working for UPS and like ShopRite.
I understand.
4 weeks from now.
By the way, Mark, does it bother you at all, or does it make you happy at all that maybe the quarterbacks that played the best, the two best quarterbacks on the field Thursday night, Colt McCoy and Brandon Whedon? Colt McCoy, 8 for 9, 102 yards.
I would not put Whedon in that category, but Colt McCoy sizzled, and you know what? I'm all for Colt McCoy keeping a job in the NFL.
He's going to make that team. He's going to make the team.
Will they keep three quarterbacks?
Yeah, it reportedly has had a really good camp, and I think they like that he adds a little veteran. Even though he's not much older than the other two guys, he's just a good guy to have around. Can't you see him being a future coach? Like, he's that
I could see him being Texas's coach.
It also helps your own son's legacy if the guy that he was named after makes it to your son's kindergarten year.
Yeah, that would help. And Simone is a Niners fan, and so she was sad to see Colt McCoy off that
roster.
Could use him. They could use him, but she actually captured an image of our son Colt watching Colt McCoy on television, which
was
a perfect marriage of reason and result.
And by the way, that final score was Washington Redskins 23, New England Patriots 6.
Sessler's boy Lake Seastrunk looked great in that game,
hashtag.
By the way. Rookie sleeper.
I will need to watch that because I don't know if this happened to you, but Game Rewind or Game Pass where I was not functioning too well last night. A little bit off the rails.
I believe the product is excellent, and if there were any technical issues, I'm sure it will be taken care of immediately.
I, for one, adore Game Pass.
A lollipop dropped from the sky.
It's all on the Wi-Fi connection at the Chargers. Oh, wait, we work for them too.
The NFL.
How do we get out of this jam?
And all its properties are infallible. I do is win. Lollipop. All right, moving forward. Hey, rematch, folks, of the Super Bowl last night. The Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks squared off at Mile High Stadium in a game that felt like it would never end. There were 25 penalties in the game. There was a lightning delay. What we did see in terms of takeaways, watch the game. DeMarcus Ware looks very, very healthy and very effective. And he got to the quarterback, sacked Russell Wilson, blew up a play in the backfield, got some hurries. He looked like the guy he was in Dallas when his arms and his legs weren't bothering him. So that's something very positive for Denver. And the Broncos also had a little bit more running back issues. I know they lost Monte Ball to an appendectomy last week. C.J. Anderson, who's fighting to get a role ahead of Ronnie Hillman, suffered a concussion. We don't know how long he'll be out. But those are the two big takeaways for me.
Ware's huge. He ran down Russell Wilson on one play and forced him to throw the ball away. I mean, he was on pace for about the best game ever. Two hurries, a sack, a stuff at the line of scrimmage. And that's what the preseason can be for. Okay, this veteran is back healthy again. Okay, this rookie quarterback looks okay. You can take that away.
Yeah, and teams like this operating at this high level, you know, one of the biggest subplots that any of the starters get injured. No, everybody got out of it healthy. Manning and Russell Wilson both led touchdown drives. One kind of funny note was right when the lightning delay hit and the Broncos had gone up 7-0, the local Denver announcer had this quote that I had to tweet out, and I'll read it to you guys now. As dominated as the Broncos were in the Super Bowl, they're returning the favor right now.
Terrible.
By the way, the score
revenge. Was, oh.
It was 7-0 at the time that he said that.
I did. And,
I wish you weren't a liar.
And then the Broncos.
Such an anchorman move.
The Broncos went on to win 21-16, so I guess, you know, they got revenge.
It's even.
February 2nd, 2014, never happened.
All ills wiped away.
That wasn't the only Super Bowl rematch last night.
Ooh, you're right. Great transition, Wes. Wes, I'm really proud of you there. The Baltimore Ravens and San Francisco 49ers also played. This is a game that Chris Wessling watched, so that explains why he was so on point there, especially with the transition. And I ask you, Chris Wessling, what was your takeaway? I'm very curious about the Ray Rice, Bernard Pierce dynamic. We've heard both guys look good. Ray Rice maybe got his burst back. Is that true?
The first team offense was only on the field for one drive with Flacco, and they looked better than I can remember them looking in a long time. I think the Kubiak offense suits Flacco well. Ray Rice had burst. He looked closer to 2012 Ray Rice than 2013, but was splitting snaps throughout the first drive with Bernard Pierce, who got the goal line love. They both looked good.
You know what might suit this offense and Gary Kubiak well? Being a coordinator. Like, it just hit me, like, maybe he's Norv Turner. Maybe he's Wade Phillips, a guy that's one of the very best coordinators in the league.
Haven't you always thought that, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wes, are you confident the snowsuit is off Ray Rice?
I am. I thought he – whereas Trent Richardson looked exactly like last year, Ray Rice did not look – I thought he looked streamlined.
Did Steve Smith play?
Steve Smith did and looks taller in a Ravens uniform.
Taller?
Yes.
Hashtag analysis.
I like that.
What does that even mean?
I'm just telling you what I saw.
Maybe he is. Maybe
I hate to go all Greg Cosell with you here, but all I do, you guys know what I do. All I do is watch the film.
And on the other side of the other backfield here, Carlos Hyde did some things.
He looked good. It's hard to separate him from the blocking, which was excellent. Bruce Miller had a fantastic block that got him to the edge. Stevie Johnson had a really good block. But he looked good, and I thought watching Jeremy Hill for the Bengals and watching Hyde for the 49ers, Bengals fans at some point this season are going to be wondering why they didn't take Carlos Hyde.
Ooh.
It is a good sign for him in terms of vision and just, you know, understanding the play that he is following the correct blocking. We don't always see, you know, as watching some Browns games last year, I could tell you that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Wes, is Blaine Gabbert in the NFL on September 1st?
That's a good question. I would say he'll still be in the NFL because they don't really have another option. And because I would think that Harbaugh's the stubborn type who thinks he can turn him around.
Why? What happened yesterday?
He looked like probably worse than he looked in Jaguars uniform.
Wow. He set a new standard for the Gabbert zone, which for new listeners is, you know, a yards per attempt average somewhere in the fives generally. His yards per attempt yesterday was 1.7.
Yikes.
Finally.
With a big interception.
That's Spurgeon wind zone.
Finally, the Kansas City Chiefs and Cincinnati Bengals offense. If you like offense, you should have been there. Andy Dalton, a 53-yard bomb to A.J. Green in his only series. The Chiefs, Travis Kelce, really made a play that turned heads. Caught a ball, ran 69 yards for a touchdown, basically outran everyone. That was an interesting look. Not a lot of defense played here, Greg, huh?
Well, when Jason Campbell was in the game, the defense perked right up for the for the Chiefs. I mean, Campbell packed more into two quarters than you could possibly want. He had two touchdown passes. He had two passes that were returned for touchdowns, and he was injured.
This guy moves the needle.
I'm just saying. Yeah, that's why we're diving deep in the Campbell.
You saw what happened when he doesn't check down. Pick sixes.
They don't have a quarterback right now if he's hurt because A.J. McCarron hasn't been able to practice either. Backup quarterback, that is.
How about Black Mamba making a play?
Who's Black Mamba? Oh, yeah, DeAnthony Thomas.
Come on. Snoop Dogg gave him the name before Kobe got it. DeAnthony had it in Pop Warner Ball.
DeAnthony Thomas has reportedly had a great camp, and everyone says he's too small for the NFL. He bounced off tacklers last night on his way to a long punt return touchdown. Between that and Travis Kelce, those were the two most explosive plays of the entire night in the NFL.
Greg and I, we hate to throw any shade on Roto World, but come on, you can't write off DeAnthony Thomas before his career ever started. He looked like the NFL game was not too fast for him.
No, and not too big for. I love the fact that he kind of got out of a jam. I mean, that stuck out to me that he could be a fun factor on special teams. And
Travis Kelce, one of the fastest tight ends in the NFL.
I have never seen a tight end run like he did on his touchdown.
That's what you said for Ladarius Green last year.
Well, those
well,
two.
Well, they keep getting faster, apparently.
None of them are faster than Vernon Davis.
260 pounds, and it was just pew!
Yeah, he's fast.
Hey, TD, I know you've been called Young Kobe during your childhood as a basketball player.
Young Kobe nickname precedes both Black Mamba nicknames.
Did you ever have any reptilian type nicknames?
No. See, Kobe nicknamed himself. That's not allowed. That's not allowed at all.
So Kobe.
All right. So those are the games. The final score there was 41-39.
Oh, got to get that score on that preseason.
Shootout in Cincinnati, or was it?
It was in Kansas City.
It's in Kansas
City.
All right, we're rolling.
Shootout.
And oh, by the way, Eric Fisher was the number one draft pick last year. I know we're trying to move on, but that's been an overlooked story. The number one pick in the whole draft, moving to left tackle. He immediately got beat for a strip sack, lost the ball.
This is the worst draft ever.
Yes.
Remember that draft as the most boring, mundane draft with the least amount of impact players, at least in the early first round. All right, gentlemen. So as we spoke about earlier, we have a guest on the line. He is a writer and analyst for the website ProFootballFocus.com, a site that proudly claims its stats and analysis are, quote, beyond compare. Mm. Here's a writer and analyst, Pete Damalatis. What's up, Pete? Welcome to the Around the League podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm a little ashamed to say this, but I actually hadn't started listening to your guys' podcast until I think it was back in May, around the time where Sessler was freaking out about drafting Johnny Manziel, but since then, honestly, you guys have kind of flown up my boards, and you're listening to me.
Ooh,
but
I
haven't missed an episode since.
Savvy way to start an interview.
Yes, and Pete, you know, as a listener, that we all use your website a lot when we do our posts and just doing research of the game. Chris Wessling, however, a man famous for his PFF qualifier statements. I'll give an example. Now, I don't take this as gospel, but PFF says Brandon Marshall is the best blocking wide receiver in football. So Chris Wessling, a man that has had some issues at times with the metrics. Pete, Wes.
Pete is one of my favorite followers on Twitter, a good guy.
By the way, Pete's Twitter handle, @PFF_Pete.
I believe every adult should think for themselves and not take anything as gospel. That's why I always give the qualifier. And it's clear that NFL teams don't always see players the same way PFF does. So that's one of the things that I always want to prepare people for. But without a doubt, one of the most valuable services out there is provided by PFF. I think I probably cite their material as much as any writer out there over the past few years. So I appreciate things like run after catch ability, which they highlight, or quarterback pressures. You don't get this stuff anywhere else, and their signature stats are great too.
So what are your issues then?
Well, I would just like to ask Pete how he sleeps at night with Ben Hartsock as his number one ranked tight end.
Oh, man.
I think if you look at it, you'll see that Ben Hartsock is our number one ranked blocking tight end. So, and that actually,
he's number one on
grade
your
above some of the other guys.
He's number one in your overall grades for tight ends.
This is true because we take blocking into account, and Ben was really great at that last season. So, Wes, to your point, I think that you don't take PFF grades as gospel. I don't think anyone should take PFF grades as gospel, and I think our analysts themselves, I don't take PFF grades as gospel. I don't evaluate a player by saying, okay, well, this guy was second in our grades, this guy was third, so this guy's clearly better than player A is better than player B, and I think you kind of have to put them in context. So I think the PFF grades are a data point, and I think they're a tremendously important one because I see all the work that goes into it and all the analysis and man hours that we put into coming up with those grades. But I think even the people behind the scenes who are coming up with those grades themselves and giving them out wouldn't say that, looking at a guy's PFF grade says, is the end all be all. For a guy, like a Ben Hartsock, I think that speaks to one thing that makes us a unique site is that we're looking at things that go beyond just your surface stats. So we're looking at blocking, we're looking at quarterback pressures for defensive ends, and also the offensive linemen who are trying to block them, and we're even timing those pass rushes to tell you, how great that was. Was it the sack a sack where the defensive end blew up the offensive tackle, or was it a kind of a clean-up, muddy sack where the quarterback just ran into his arms? So, I think you can see some of the grades on our site and all the work that goes into it, and that's why you get some things that, like Ben Hartsock being the number one ranked tight end. But really, if you look, drill down into it, he's by far the best blocking tight end of the league last season, but not so great as a receiver.
Right, so just out of curiosity, that's all very well explained, but when you see something like Ben Hartsock as your number one ranked tight end when he didn't catch a pass and played about one-fourth of the snaps at Jimmy Graham, why are you guys not going back to the drawing board and saying maybe we should not count blocking as important, because blocking tight ends aren't even drafted in the first five rounds in the NFL?
Well, I think it's because when you look at the grades, that we're trying to evaluate performance, and we're – in many times, in many instances, we're giving out the grades as if they're any other player on the team. So, if he's trying to make a block and he does a good block, it's kind of the same thing as if an offensive guard is trying to do the same type of block. Now, the difference is that we normalize it across the different positions. So, that's how you get some instances where a one good block for a tight end might matter, a little bit more than a block for a guard who's kind of out there blocking for 60, 70 snaps a game. So, I think there are differences, and I see your point, Wes. I'd say that if we go back and we look at it, maybe we shouldn't have blocking grades maybe as high, but those are grades, we stand by them, and to be honest, that's why we say we don't take it as gospel either. So you kind of have to take everything into context, and I don't think you would, even though Ben Hartsock is our number one grade tight end, I don't think anyone on the PFF team would tell you that Ben Hartsock was the best tight end in the league last year.
We're talking with Pete Damoletis of ProFootballFocus.com. Pete, when you look at the numbers, because the way you guys study the game is different than a lot of other people, I'm just curious, last season, was there a player that, according to your data, completely transformed himself from an average guy to a star player, or maybe the other way around? Is there someone that really, when you studied the data, really kind of jumped out at you one way or the other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are a couple of those younger players who have been in the league for a couple seasons that took major leaps last year. I mean, at the top of that list is Robert Quinn. He went from, you know, in the past he'd put up some good numbers and good grades by us, but we saw a tendency of him to beat up on easier competition, specifically when he was playing teams like the Cardinals, who, you know, kind of can have a bit of a offensive line, some offensive line issues. Robert Quinn would just rack up stats against them, but then against tougher competition, he would sort of get shut down. Last year, he took a major leap, and he was dominating, very good competition on a consistent basis. And he was actually our number two defensive player in the league. You know, he would have been won our Defensive Player of the Year award if it wasn't for the greatness of J.J. Watt. So he's a guy who made leaps and bounds. I look at another guy like a Cameron Jordan, who, you know, in the past had sort of the same thing, that, you know, he had flashed some talent, but, you know, former first round pick, but he hadn't kind of put it together. And last year we really saw him do that, where he put everything together. He was a force on the interior. And it's kind of great to see. I think it's also a bit of a league-wide trend when you see guys like J.J. Watt and Geno Atkins and Cameron Jordan, who are kind of bringing that pressure from the interior. Guys like Gerald McCoy as well, who took another leap last season. He was, you know, we did our PFF top 101 for 2013. He was our fourth graded player. So it's nice to see that, you know, the game changing, going towards the pass. You're seeing a lot of interior rushers disrupting offenses in a way that we haven't seen in the past.
How about somebody that went the other way?
Someone that went the other way. I mean, you look at some veterans who, and I, one guy that comes to mind is Ike Taylor, who, you know, for years the Steelers had him as a sort of a island cornerback, where they asked him to do a lot of man, follow the number one receiver around the field. And he did pretty well in that role. And he never even got the highest PFF grades, but that's, again, another instance where you have to put our grades into context, because his job was a lot harder than someone who just had to, you know, would line up on one side of the field in zone coverage. But last year he kind of took a big step back. Towards the middle of the season, they weren't even having him shadow receivers anymore. He had one of our worst grades as a cornerback. So he's a guy that kind of jumps to the top of my head as a guy who took a major step back. So, and of course you have your obvious candidates like an Eli Manning, who was consistently a top 10 quarterback in our grading year after year. And last season, the wheels came off the offense. He didn't have any chemistry with his receivers, and we all know how that went.
I think we'd agree with you there. When it comes to the process, let's say, you know, last night the Jets played the Colts, and they say, Pete, go break down this game, grade it. I mean, nuts and bolts. What's the process for you to do that?
So we have this is why I have a lot of trust in Pro Football Focus in our system. It's because we have we put so much work into it, and we have such a fleshed out process. So we'll have a couple guys who are doing what you call player participation, where you're looking through and you're marking where every player is on every play, and, you know, who's blitzing, who's lining up, you know, inside the tackles, outside the tackles, what receivers are in the slot, who's up on the line of scrimmage, stuff like that. And you're marking all that, and that helps us normalize those grades at the end of the game, because it makes a difference if a guy has a sack when he's only in the game for 5 snaps rather than he has 1 sack and he was in the game for 70. And then we have another couple analysts who do the actual grading. So they're going through and they're looking at, you know, what's exactly happening on the play, what was supposed to happen, if a running back had stopped for a loss. Was it because, you know, he took a bad angle, the hole was there, and he kind of bounced it to the outside for some reason, like say maybe a Trent Richardson or Chris Johnson tended to do last year, or, if it was a blown block by a guy. And to be honest, for the most part, most players on a specific play don't even get a grade, because, you know, they held the block well, or, you know, they got a piece of defender. They didn't, like, shove him back and open up a wide hole, but they didn't get pushed back either. And it's sort of, you know, okay, that's a null. But, you know, you'll only have, you know, a handful of guys that get graded on every play. But then, you know, we are going through, we're inputting that information into our database, and at the end of the game you have a grade. And it's kind of shocking how, and the reason I like it is I like to call it almost quantified scouting, because if you can go through a game and you can see a guy who has a sack and a tackle for loss, and you're saying, oh, wow, he had a good game, and then you see the grade at the end of the game, you're like, actually, you know, it was kind of average, because, you know, I forgot that he kind of didn't hold the edge on that one play, and he got pushed back, and then he missed that other tackle. And then after all, you know, once you add everything up, you see that, you know, his grade was kind of not as great as you expected, or sometimes a lot better than you expected.
Ryan Tannehill ranked last year in Pro Football Focus's rankings ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of Aaron Rodgers, way ahead of Andrew Luck. What did you think people saw on a game-to-game basis that would put Ryan Tannehill in the top five quarterbacks in the league?
I think Tannehill, I think that honestly he did a good job. I like his intermediate accuracy. His deep ball, you know, he had some deep ball issues that I think that are well documented. He tended to hold on to the ball a little too long. I think the Miami offensive line got a lot of heat for the amount of sacks they gave up, but some of it was Tannehill's fault as well. But, you know, I think that he did a pretty good job on his accuracy. And also in general, you know, I don't think that his mistakes were grossly more than a lot of other quarterbacks out there. And it's funny to see, you know, interception numbers and then to see kind of our grades, because you see a guy like Andrew Luck, who has a little bit of a worse PFF grade last year than Matt Stafford and Ryan Tannehill. And you kind of look back at, they actually kind of all, we chart throws by, you know, we'll give negative grades for throws, and you get a really bad grade if you have throw an interception, like a wildly erratic interception or a pass that goes nowhere near the receiver. And Andrew Luck had just as many of those as Ryan Tannehill and Matt Stafford did last year. But for one reason or another, you know, we saw a good amount of dropped interceptions from Andrew Luck that he got away with. You'll see, you know, some the stats kind of don't even out. So even though our grades are a little bit higher on one guy over another, you might, you know, that's I think what makes people a little bit shocked by everything, because you'll see, oh, Ryan Tannehill and Matt Stafford had so many interceptions. But sometimes it was just unlucky plays as well on their part.
Yeah, that Tannehill grade is just crazy. So I guess knowing that the Tannehill grade is crazy, and I know you guys grade like
Pete's like, why am I on the show right now?
Well, it's gibberish. It's nonsensical.
Well, it is weird because the way you were explaining it, if this level says that Tannehill played at an MVP level, so I would sort of expect PFF to have a big push, like Tannehill is an Aaron Rodgers level guy. I don't know.
No, I guess
the thing with Tannehill is I don't think that he should get the flack that he does, where the coaches are almost, you know, calling him out in the off season saying, well, this is, you know, put up or shut up time, and that's what I think that's a general sense that people have around Tannehill right now. I don't think that's the case. I think that he's developed in his couple of years. I think he's shown a pretty good amount of skill. And I think there's a lot to build on there. So yeah, and frankly, I think Andrew Luck had the better season, if you ask me, last year, just because of,
well, that's,
you
know, that's indisputable.
Some of the weapons around him. I think he didn't have as much to work with as Ryan Tannehill did, and I didn't think his offensive line was nearly as good. But honestly, I think that, you know, Tannehill doesn't deserve a lot of the criticism that he gets.
What I was going to ask was, I feel like I learned that you guys give like a plus two or a minus two, the people who do the grading on each play.
Mm-hmm.
What are the qualifications for the person doing this analysis? What qualifies them to do that job?
So a lot of it's just, you know, we just have a very stringent application and training process. So we have guys who have been doing grading for a few years, but, you know, to get to that level, you have to do player participation for a season, a couple seasons. Grading, you know, you'll spend the entire off season going through games, game after game, putting in grades till you get both the accuracy and the efficiency to have a game graded, you know, by the next day, you know, for when the teams that use us need our grades by. So, you know, we'll basically, you know, the qualifications, you know, we don't have former coaches, we don't have former defensive coordinators or anything doing our grades, but, you know, we have a lot of knowledgeable guys out here, you know, Steve Palazzolo, Sam Munson, you know, I'd put their football acumen up with anyone out there. And I think that, you know, going through, we have this a stringent enough process and a stringent enough checks and balances, where if we see a play and we see that, you know, two guys have a different grade on it, we'll talk it out and look through and say, okay, well, this guy, you know, why did you think, you know, it was on the cornerback? Why did you think it was on the safety? And another important point to put out is we don't guess. So if we don't know, you know, what happened on the play, and we think that, you know, there's really no way to tell. And honestly, most of the time you can tell, you know, who is at fault. But most of the time, if there's those few times where you can't tell, we're not going to kill a guy with his grade because we don't know, you know, what coverage they were supposed to be in.
And I think that's a good point that Pete makes. Sometimes you get the feeling when you follow sports and NFL specifically that you have to be a player, or be a coach or something to really understand the game. But these are guys that do their homework. And that's why we use Pete's site all the time, profootballfocus.com. Pete, thank you for coming on. One last question, and I'm just curious. I like to ask other human beings this question.
Yeah.
Will Wes eat his softball pants?
I firmly believe that he will not. I don't
see Wes and Pete now in the same tree together.
Well, it's interesting.
I don't buy the you know, we're not going to start Manziel. I think they're going to start. Honestly, I think we're also going to see Blake Bortles up out there starting by, you know, week two, week three. You know, it's I think taking these guys so high, and I think also quarterbacks are more NFL ready than they have been in the past. Sitting a guy who you invested so much in for a year or however many weeks they're planning on doing it, I just don't buy it.
Well, Pete doesn't think Chris will eat his softball pants, but I have noticed a little change as we're heading to week one of the preseason that even Chris Wessling seems to start being accepting his role that he will be eating some softball pants.
They exist and they will be eaten.
That was said.
That is taken out of
Chris
context.
Wessling. He was talking about his softball pants last,
play that again.
Last show.
They exist and they will be eaten.
That is taken way out of context. I now feel like how athletes feel when reporters take their quotes out of context.
It's a quote. It's a fact.
All right. Pete, thank you very much for coming on. You could follow Pete at PFF _Pete. Great follow and a great football site. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a pleasure.
There you go, Wes. I feel like you did, as TD remarked on IM during that, you did not back down. You had points you were going to make, and
you can see why I'm conflicted. Though they give very valuable information. It's based off film watching, and nobody watches more film than they do. But they do ridiculous stuff like Ryan Tannehill ahead of Big Ben and Andrew Luck when it's just absolutely a farce. I mean, it ends up being a farce of a grade.
Well, there's so much value in them watching every single snap. They have such good information from that. I really like I think it's called the Refocused. Every week they have just takeaways from watching. To me, that's the best value you have is in the written word.
Yep. And they see things,
not the numbers. I'm
the saying. World of football analysis is a much more enlightened place because of Pro Football Focus. I mean, I do want to make that point implicitly.
All right. Well, that's it for Friday's edition of the Around the League podcast. We will be back next week with three more shows. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off. For the Sizzler, the Mailman, the Boss, and TD behind the glass. And why don't we play it out with Sessler finishing up his list of Dallas Cowboys defense commentary.
It's 50 terms of why they are.
Yeah, where are we at right now?
We are at 23.
50? I feel like it's 500.
Well,
all right, go ahead, Mark.
It does feel a tad long. Here we go. Every horrible ex-girlfriend embodied in a loose 4-3 scheme. Sterile. A wasteland of ideas. The bottom of the food chain.
I'm going to go back to the food chain.
The opposite of human attraction. Dead leaves. A corpse.
Yeah, I'm checking out too, guys.
A wreckage. Scattered parts. Fat-faced. Never sexy. Intellectually suspect. Untraveled. Pockmarked. Soiled.
I'm going to go get some lunch.
Swirling into a pit. Level below human. Pistol.